Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving, and sadly, Ken Rudin will not be with us today.
Oh.
But I'm Andrea Seabrook.
Yay! Back by popular demand. Good to see you, Andrea.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And we have much to talk about regarding your favorite subject, the House of Representatives.
Do we have a lot to talk about?
There's a great deal to talk about. Yes. Well, among other things, we need to talk about ethics, distrust.
Oh, yeah.
The Pew Research Center did a poll and found that only one American in five trusts Washington most of the time or all the time to do the right thing. And so my question is, who is that fifth American?
Oh, boy. I don't know, but I'd sure like to meet him. Because when I say I cover Congress, most people say, huh, how is that?
They sort of move away from you on the Group W bench,
yeah, exactly,
right? I mean,
exactly.
It does seem a little bit like extraordinary outre behavior.
The amazing thing about that survey is that Congress, among all of these Washington institutions that people don't trust, Congress scored the lowest it ever has.
That's right. And they were the only one. There were a lot of bad, bad scores.
Bad, but this was record-breaking.
The record-breaking low was for Congress. And I put it to you, Andrea Seabrook, congressional correspondent for NPR. Why?
Well, one interesting thing is buried in the numbers of the survey is people don't agree about policy. They're pretty polarized about the issues and so on. But the one thing Americans really do agree on is three or four things that they really hate about Congress. It's the one place where all, like, they got 80% numbers in that poll, and that is the lawmakers only care about their own careers. They refuse to compromise. They get too much special interest money. You know, it's the same sort of four things.
It's a litany.
People cite over and over again, normal people out in America. The Republicans that are faring slightly better than the Democrats right now, but not compared to 1993 when we saw similar low numbers for Congress, but the Republicans had a much better brand.
Now, let me get the history of this institution right, make sure I remember this correctly. There was a very large spaceship that landed in the middle of Washington, D.C., and 435 people ran out of the machine into the House of Representatives, and another 100 ran over to the Senate. That they all came from another planet.
Yeah, see, that's part of the point. Is America, you got to investigate your own part in this. You elect these people, and over again, people are voting for politicians who have fiery rhetoric, the Dennis Kuciniches, the Marco Rubios, people who are on far out on the left and the right, but then they expect them to go to Washington and compromise.
They also don't think that badly of their own individual congressperson,
right,
as I understand it, even in this awful poll where one American in five thinks anything at all positive about Congress.
They're all crooks, but my man.
Is that because they think that their individual congressperson is an exception to all of the indictment, or is it because they want somebody to go to Washington and be a jerk on their behalf?
You know, I think there's a genuine lack of understanding about how the process works in Washington, and people really want someone to go to Washington and force everyone to compromise with their point of view. It's this very odd dynamic in the United States right now. And as I said, you know, several experts said to me this week, until people start valuing in those elections at home, valuing rational centrist moderate ideas or rational speech at all and voting for it, it's going to be like this. But I have to say one other thing. Yes, you get what you vote for. On the other side, you can't just blame the people for how Congress is working either, because these guys may say that they're going to compromise, go to Washington, and have absolutely no spine at all. I mean, they could compromise if they wanted to, and they choose not to.
Do you think the essential problem with Congress is that they don't compromise enough?
No. The essential problem with Congress, and I think any number of experts would tell you this, is that everyone perceives that the majority is at play all the time. So lawmakers are constantly doing everything they can to try and maintain or regain the majority. And it's all about that all the time. It becomes a constant campaign. There's no incentive to compromise. That's sleeping with the enemy.
How much of this, too, is true because we see the worst of Congress most in the media? For example, I'm going to throw out a name, Eric Massa, somebody we have tried not to talk that much about in the podcast because a lot of the appeal of his story is salacious.
Yeah.
And
tickle fights.
And maybe it's prurient. That appeals to Ken, but since he's not here this week, we could talk about Eric Massa and not just talk about tickle fights. Do we just get the worst of Congress, in particularly the way the media cover Congress?
To some extent, I think the more we lose really deep expert journalists, the more stories like the weird reconciliation rules and the demon pass sort of stories that were out there seem like big deals when they really
aren't. Procedural stories.
Suddenly, it makes Congress look like they're doing these crazy things suddenly when they've been doing these crazy things for a long time.
And process probably in any legislative body would look a lot the same, if not worse. Do we think the Congress of today is ethically more challenged than the Congress of, say, 20 or 50 or 100 years ago?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, and on one sense, you're always going to have your crazy Eric Masses, and there's sort of a stretch of disgraced members who end up leaving. On the other hand, there certainly is a lot more money in politics than there ever has been. And so the perception by Americans that a company can pay a lawmaker a lot of money to run a campaign and then the lawmaker goes and passes a bill in that company's favor, the perception that that's somehow bribery, well...
That's a good question.
It's out there.
It's an excellent question. Now, on the Massa matter, just not to elide it entirely, he has been charged with, or is he being investigated for having made a $40,000 payment of uncertain provenance to his former chief of staff?
He is being investigated by the Justice Department for that, as far as we know.
All right.
But really, the most important part about the Massa story, you know, aside from all the salacious details, is who, and this is what the Ethics Committee wants to know, is who in Congress... among lawmakers, among leadership, among staffers, who knew about this stuff that had been going on for over a year?
Abusive staff, essentially, and cover-up of abusive staff.
Abusive staff, living with young staffers in a group house, all kinds of things that range from inappropriate
to
harassment.
Right.
Who knew what was going on, and what did they do with that information? Why wasn't it reported earlier, basically, is what the Ethics Committee wants to know. So we've got the Ethics Committee has announced a broad investigation into this whole matter, and I think it will go on for a long time. They specifically said they're looking at leadership. They've actually interviewed people, Majority Leader Hoyer, people in Pelosi's office already, and they say that if they find any evidence that someone handled these rumors incorrectly, they're going to immediately start investigating that person as well. They're not going to take the procedural time to start a new investigation on that person. So they seem serious about this.
So they're going to try to move up the ladder of power to see whether or not there was a cover-up at higher levels.
Yes.
As we saw in 2006, as an investigation tried to figure out who knew about what was going on between Congressman Foley, Mark Foley,
and Denny Hastert. Speaker Denny Hastert at the time, who apparently knew something of Mark Foley. Remember the Florida Republican who was found texting over his phone with pages,
underage pages. Not paid staff, but underage pages.
In a provocative manner. Now, at that, remember, this is one of the things that took down the Republican majority.
It
contributed to this sort of cloud of ethics problems among the Republican majority. And so now the Republicans are, for that reason, very insistent that this matter with Massa and who knew what when should be investigated as well.
Sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander.
So let me turn the question back on you, because isn't this basically, aren't there always creeps and crooks in Congress? But the money game is different.
I would say the money game is different because television has made the numbers so much bigger. Television has made the idea of a $5 million campaign for a house in Congress imaginable, whereas before television, thousands, tens of thousands was considered more than adequate. But in terms of behavior, I would say the big difference between now and even 25 years ago, certainly 50 or 100 years ago, is that you see investigations and you see people actually being exposed and punished. Whereas in the past, by and large, sexual harassment, bribery, corruption, log rolling of one kind and another, all kinds of reprehensible behavior went on and was undetected and was largely went unpunished because people just never found out about it.
David Dreyer, the Republican from California, the top Republican in the Rules Committee, told me once when he first came to Congress, Bill Archer, who had been in Congress for 1,000 years, told him, well, when Bill Archer came to Congress, they used to issue you 2 desks, 2 chairs, and a safe. And they would say that, you know, there's a desk and a chair for you, there's a desk and a chair for your secretary, and the safe is for the money that the lobbyists bring you.
Quite typically, I think that was the case.
To some, you know, at least that's one of the stories. And let me throw in a couple quick ideas into the mistrust thing. Two things that political scientists and scholars said to me over and over again was, one, these numbers are in part so low because the economy is so bad. And when people are feeling a financial pinch, they're much more likely to say, I don't trust the government, I hate them, throw the bums out. Also, there's some amount of this that is a natural follow-on from the baby boomers being the controlling generation. The original questioners of government are now in control of the United States, and they're the ones, the biggest majority of voters. And in the polls, the younger people were much more likely to have trust in the government institutions.
At least be hopeful. Yes.
Yeah,
have
at
trust,
least have
or at
optimism.
Least be hopeful.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right. And the older people still have that notion that your government, right or wrong, you
right.
know, my country, right or wrong, and that to some degree transfers from national loyalty, country, America, some loyalty to its institutions, even when the individuals in the institutions misbehave.
Right.
The question is, to what degree? And obviously, these things have been changing.
Codgers.
We talked a little bit about procedures, and we talked about things that Congress does as a matter of course that don't look very good under the light of day. One of those came to light this particular week as people got upset that court appointments and other appointments to jobs in the executive branch of the government have been pending for weeks and months, not because there's controversy about the nominee, not because there's controversy about whether there needs to be a person in the job, but because somebody, some individual senator, is trying to get attention for a pet project back in his or her state, and they're holding the nomination hostage.
Secret holds in the Senate. I find this absolutely jaw-dropping. I mean, I think if the normal American could understand how this works, people would just, it would blow their heads off.
You think they'd have a strong reaction?
Because, listen, what's happening is any member of the Senate can go and hold something secretly. This has been a problem for a long time. It's just this amazingly silly thing. So the Senate passed a rule, two years ago.
By holding it, they're essentially saying, if you bring this to the floor, I will filibuster it.
But it can be done in the dark. I mean, these people don't have to say who they are, which has been a problem for a long time. So the Senate, a couple years ago, passes a rule on itself saying if a secret hold is held for 6 days, at the sixth day, the name of the person holding gets published in the record. So these things would come to light. Well, it turns out what these guys are doing is after 5 days, they drop their hold and they tag team it with someone else who starts the hold then. So the name doesn't get published in the record. It's like a schoolyard of 12-year-old boys who are playing tag. Oh, I'm going to touch the base. No, quick, you touch the base. And they run off. I mean, it's just, it's so amazing that nominations to major seats on the bench could be held up secretly in a Democratic body of this government. It's fascinating.
Senators getting around the rules are quicker than senators making rules.
Yes.
I want to make a big segue here from talking about Congress to talking about the one institution that Americans think Congress ought to rein in. Imagine this. Nobody has any faith in Congress, but they have enough faith in Congress that they want Congress to go after this other famous institution and come down on them hard.
Mm-hmm.
Wall Street.
Yeah.
Wall Street's numbers are even poorer. Is there a comparison here somewhere between the way business has changed in Congress and the way things have changed on Wall Street, where it's no longer about building a bridge, financing a company, buying and selling goods? It's about winning bets that are made against other people's bets on pieces of paper that are derivative of some actual substance, but which are not in themselves ownership of anything.
Yeah, it's become, instead of, you know, owning a horse that's going to be in the race, Wall Street has become the people at the track or even outside in the parking lot betting on who's going to win in the race that they don't necessarily have any real knowledge on.
They're betting on how the betting is going to go.
Betting on how the betting is
going to
go.
Which is how the racetrack wins, how the casino wins, how Las Vegas wins.
Yeah, and so it becomes so close to gambling and not trading that I think your average American, when they find this out and they happen to have just shelled out a lot of, or the government has shelled out taxpayer dollars to bail out these guys.
2008 bailout.
People are looking at that and going, what's going on? I don't understand.
And while this has been defended very eloquently by people who understand how the market works, I think eludes the average American's understanding why this is okay.
You're right. It's so close to sort of a member of Congress saying, no, no, we just demon pass things all the time.
We just make the rules as
we just,
go along.
You know, it looks weird, but believe me, it's above board. So one thing about the legislation, the Senate currently is working on its financial regulation package. The House passed one last year, I think in November. That one was sort of gutted because the pay-fors for it were ripped out by the Senate and used in the health care bill.
Whoops.
So the House has got to rejigger that, and that'll happen in Congress. What's interesting is this is becoming increasingly bipartisan. In the beginning, when the Senate first, when Chris Dodd, Connecticut senator, first revealed what he wanted to do, it looked as if, you know, Mitch McConnell came out and said, this is just another bailout for Wall Street, and we're just going to bail them out. It's institutionalizing it forever. As that week went on that he said that, he came back to the floor and said, well, actually, maybe this is workable. We're going to, you know, work on this. And
we're talking again.
We're talking again. And then you see that when the derivatives part was voted out of the Ag Committee, Chuck Grassley voted for it. Now, remember, Chuck Grassley famously voted against the health care legislation.
That was a big part.
It set a tone for that debate. And so this is actually, you know, there are quite a few Republican members of the Senate who want to vote for this.
They certainly don't want to vote against it. If it's being perceived as reigning in Wall Street, then you don't want to vote against it.
They particularly would like to show that they aren't just always only on the side of Wall Street with this election coming up. Big business. Yeah.
Although it's interesting to note the degree to which Wall Street has lavished its funding on Democrats and Republicans alike.
Yeah.
People like Chuck Schumer, who is, of course, from New York, and lots of other big-name Democrats have raised enormous amounts of money on Wall Street from some of these same people.
Chris Dodd himself.
That they're coming back now to try to rein in and regulate.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some hard feelings there. I think there are some people who feel that their money spent on Democrats was not well invested.
Well, I think Wall Street picks who they think will win an election, and they hedge their bets by throwing the money around to those campaigns. I think one of the biggest signals that this was going to be real financial regulation legislation and not just some kind of token bill was Chris Dodd announcing his retirement, because I think that released his leash to some extent. He gets so much money, or has gotten so much money from banks and from big Wall Street firms, that everyone was wondering how he could possibly go.
So he had to neuter himself, in other words, to continue to lead the drive for
some
sort of bill.
He made a decision that this was going to be the last big thing he does. And so he doesn't have to follow anybody's ideas of what should be done here.
Speaking of exiting from politics, there are some very large names that may be on the brink of doing just that.
Oh, yes.
We have talked back and forth on this podcast for some time about the phenomenon of Charlie Crist, who was one of the great stars of the Republican Party just a year ago, 2 years ago, a shortlist for vice president, assumed to be going from governorship of Florida to the Senate seat from Florida. This career has almost literally burned down in front of everybody's eyes.
Amazing.
From the moment when he hugged Barack Obama on a stage a year ago in Florida, thanking him in a sense for the money that Florida was getting from the stimulus package. And that made him a sort of target number one for the Tea Party movement, not only in Florida, but nationally. People calling him a rhino Republican in name only.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are on the brink, and a lot of people are expecting him to drop out of the Republican primary for the Senate, where he's trailing badly to Marco Rubio, former Speaker of the House there in Florida, and run as an independent to try to redeem himself. What's your bet? Everybody's betting on where Charlie's going to go.
I think Charlie is going to go to his beach house and hang out there. I mean, Dick Cheney just endorsed Marco Rubio for the primary, and in his endorsement of Marco Rubio said, and I really hope that Charlie Crist should remain a Republican, you know, either drop out of the race or remain a Republican. Otherwise, it's not good for anybody. It only helps the Democratic Party.
And that is obviously the standard Republican view, as it would be. But what about Charlie Crist? Does he see a future for himself in the Republican Party? Where does he go? He can't come back and run for governor or senator. The party has had done with him. Even if he doesn't desert and run as an independent, I think the party has decided that he is yesterday's news in a bad letter.
I don't know. I wouldn't write him off so quickly. Maybe this cycle. But the Republican Party right now has been, at least in that race, certainly, and somewhat nationally, been taken over by the Tea Party movement. And Marco Rubio is wholly part of the Tea Party movement.
He's their biggest favorite other than Sarah Palin.
Conservative Political Action Conference earlier this year. And I think there is a future that some Republicans see, especially senators. They won't say it on the record, but they see the party at some point swinging back to more moderate agendas. Several senators have said to me, and scholars as well, we're not sure we want to spend our entire terms voting no to stop things that are going to be catastrophic instead of voting yes and making them better. And that would require a swing to a bigger tent Republican Party, one that is more interested in moderate lawmakers, and that you could see a resurgence of someone like Charlie Crist maybe in an election or two from now.
Here's another question. If he did come to Washington as an independent, as Joe Lieberman did, which party would he caucus with?
Well, he might pull a Lieberman, except opposite day, you know? I mean, he might
caucus with one
caucus
and vote
with the Republicans
other.
And vote with the Democrats. I mean, you know, anything could happen in this brave new world.
Well, and I hope that one of the things that happens in this brave new world is that you'll come back and join us again at some future point, Andrea. It's always a delight to have you.
Thank you, sir.
And we also hope that Mr. Rudin gets well. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron/Elving.
And I'm Andrea/Seabrook.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. Decisions bugging me.
Indecision, they molest me.
If you don't want me, set me free.